We're in a trade war. China's been conducting one for years. They've been targeting American industries, closing their markets.
China says trade progress has been made with the United States. It's Tuesday, June 5th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Did you know we're also on Facebook at VOA Asia? Also ahead, North Korea has new top military leaders. Australia's intelligence laws under review. Philippines cleans up on World Environment Day. New gene therapy. Earthly clues about life on Mars. It's all on today's VOA Asia. After 2 days of trade talks in Beijing, China said it made positive and concrete progress with the United States, adding there was good communication in agricultural and energy sectors following the consensus reached 2 weeks ago in Washington. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross described the talks Saturday and Sunday as friendly and frank. While China has offered to buy more from other nations, including the United States, by increasing imports, the Trump administration has demanded China also implement structural changes, dealing with joint venture requirements and intellectual property theft. Last week, the United States threatened 25% tariffs on $50 billion in Chinese exports with Beijing, vowing retaliation. University of Maryland economics professor Peter Morisi tells VOA's Victor Beatty, China stonewalling the United States and undermining the disciplines of the World Trade Organization.
We're not alone in being concerned about China. The European Union has filed a WTO case. Unfortunately, the WTO doesn't work very well for the kind of stuff that China does, and we're trying to negotiate with them directly. Frankly, they're not taking us very seriously, and so I wouldn't be surprised if they get slapped with some punitive tariffs.
China indicates that it's going to buy more from other countries, including the U.S., but the U.S. says they also want structural changes.
Absolutely. Buying more sorghum doesn't do us a whole lot of good. I mean, it makes the farmers feel better for a little while, but China's targeting artificial intelligence, the microprocessors that go into robotics and so forth. They're targeting one major industry after another with massive government subsidies. They're denying us market access for our truly competitive manufacturing products. China's just not playing fair. And frankly, I think that so far, Donald Trump has gone easy with China. If I were president of the United States, President Xi wouldn't want to get out of bed in the morning.
So are we headed for a trade war?
We're in a trade war. China's been conducting one for years. They've been targeting American industries, closing their markets, taking advantage of WTO rules that were put there for poorer nations. China is not a poor nation. China is a trade abuser. China is a trade criminal. And China's got to clean up its act. The real question is whether Donald Trump's going to put his big boy pants on and really do business with China the way it needs to be done, or he's going to settle for a deal on soybeans, sorghums, and SUVs.
Well, the latest round of trade talks, at least Mr. Ross's part in it in Beijing, is over. What happens next?
Well, we have to see what he brought back, and we'll know more about that this week. But if it's just some offers on some agricultural products and cars, well, it's nice to sell more of that stuff. We've been asking for major changes, and if we don't get them, Donald Trump has to decide whether he's going to back down or he's going to really challenge China. I can't answer the question as to what's going to happen next.
Mr. Trump's comments about ZTE Corporation, the Chinese telecom giant, is he backing off or is he still threatening basically to halt operations?
Well, right now operations are halted. They cannot buy American parts, and we'll see how that works out. But that's just a little piece of the problem. That's a cell phone maker. We have much bigger problems with China, and China doesn't want to play by the rules of civilized nations. You know, one of the things I know when I make a deal with the Chinese, either they're not telling the truth or they're going to break their word.
In an editorial, the state-run Global Times said Washington's on-then-off tariff threats means a protracted trade dispute. It called on the United States to choose what it really wants, more tariffs or more exports. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. Escalation of Sino-U.S. tension hurts Southeast Asian coastal states. Russia invites North Korean leader for visit. Hong Kong lawmakers elect sentenced for unlawful assembly. Can U.S. Seoul Alliance survive a nuclear deal? Calls for China to face ghosts of its past on Tiananmen anniversary. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. North Korea's three top military leaders have been replaced. Quoting an unidentified source inside South Korea's intelligence agency, South Korean news agency Yonhap says the new leaders are No Kwang-chol, who is replacing Park Yong-sik as defense chief, Ri Yong-gil, who becomes chief of the general staff of the Korean People's Army, replacing Ri Myung-soo, and Army General Kim Soo-gil as the new leader of the General Political Bureau of the Korean People's Army, replacing Kim Jong-gak. The intelligence agency source tells Yonhap the changes were made due to the new push towards détente with South Korea and the United States, noting that the three previous leaders lacked flexibility in thinking. The changes could be aimed at bringing the military in line ahead of a potential denuclearization deal between leader Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump at their planned June 12th summit in Singapore. But another intelligence source says the replacements could also represent a generational change. Scott Snyder, senior fellow for Korean studies at the Washington-based Council for Foreign Relations, tells VOA Asia's Ira Melman the timing of the changes made in Pyongyang are quite telling.
Time is really the critical question because we see that there are other domestic policies in North Korea that are being adjusted or revamped. Most notably, the commitment by the party to move forward with an economic reform agenda that appears to downplay or remove the focus on nuclear development. And, of course, this is against the backdrop of Kim Jong-un's meeting with Moon Jae-in and a prospective meeting with Donald Trump in Singapore next week.
Is this unprecedented, or have similar changes been made before other meetings, important meetings?
I think that we've seen a lot of flux in terms of the positions within the military over the course of the time that Kim Jong-un has been in power. But this comes against the backdrop of Kim Jong-un establishing international relations with top leaders that really didn't exist prior to the end of this year.
Is this a win for Donald Trump and the United States?
No, it's too early to be able to say. What we do need to see alongside a commitment to denuclearization is evidence of sincerity through internal domestic political changes that this is actually meaningful. So I do think that it is important that there is evidence of internal change inside North Korea. And, of course, we just had Kim Jong-chol in the White House, and he is known as a hardliner, and yet he was delivering a letter from Kim Jong-un. So, you know, there are reasons to anticipate potentially some further changes by Kim Jong-un. But I really think we have to wait and see.
Do you think that Kim Jong-un and the North Koreans are expecting some kind of reciprocal actions before the summit between Trump and Kim take place? Not necessarily nuclear, but anything.
I think actually the meeting at the White House may have been the signal to Kim Jong-un that the U.S. is prepared to move forward on some of the issues that he is most concerned about, including an adjustment to what North Korea perceives as the hostile policy of the United States. And there's no bigger signal that the U.S. may be prepared to change that policy than a meeting with the U.S. president. And then also there is the possibility that we would see, you know, something along the lines of tension reduction, security guarantees, or even a declaration that presages an end to a formal end to the Korean War.
In your view, what has been the role of South Korea in this entire scenario?
Well, President Moon in South Korea has been the biggest risk taker, but also has played a very important, really a critical facilitating role in bringing the U.S. And North Korea together. And here I think the important aspect of the way that South Korea has done this under Moon Jae-in is that he has tried to open the way, but he's definitely trying to do it together with the United States. And that's important because past efforts to reach out to North Korea by South Korea have ended up foundering as a result of a lack of support from the United States for such efforts.
Do you think that initial reports are true that say that Donald Trump wanted to go in and just have a one-day meeting, originally anyway, have a one-day meeting and then everything would be fine? Now he's talking more about taking a longer time. How do you think about this whole thing?
I think it's an important development that President Trump is talking now about a process possibly involving a series of meetings. I think that is a more realistic approach, but at the same time, it does raise the question of whether or not in the initial stages we're going to see the kind of strategic commitment on the part of North Korea to denuclearization that would truly convince the outside world that Kim Jong-un is really committed to full, complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization.
Scott Snyder, Senior Fellow for Korean Studies at the Washington-based Council for Foreign Relations, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Happening now in Asia, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman says U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has absolutely no qualifications to demand the Chinese government do anything. Pompeo urged Beijing to provide a full public accounting of those who were killed, detained, or went missing during the 1989 Tiananmen Square crackdown. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Australia's intelligence laws are to be reviewed in the most comprehensive overhaul of national security legislation in decades. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The review will take 18 months and will be led by a former spy chief. It will be the most comprehensive review of Australia's intelligence laws since the 1970s. Much of its terms of reference are being kept secret, but officials say the shake-up we'll look at how information is shared among the nation's six security and intelligence agencies, as well as with other law enforcement bodies. Analysts say the review is long overdue, with existing laws designed for a previous era. They say the review would likely address the main threats facing Australia: terrorism, cyber warfare, and influence by foreign powers. Australia's Federal Attorney General Christian Porter says the overhaul will help to integrate the various agencies that keep the nation safe.
The control, direction and coordination of all of these agencies and the way they interact with non-intelligence agencies and state-based agencies such as state police forces. It's looking at how we share information and whether or not that can be improved on. It's looking at the overall staffing and resources, so it has a very holistic approach. And the other thing it'll look at is accountability and oversight.
The review comes amid rising fears in Australia over the influence of China in its domestic affairs. Earlier this week, media reports detailed allegations apparently contained in a top-secret report that China has attempted to influence Australia's political parties for the past decade, as well as every level of government. Beijing has previously accused Australia of being anti-China. Last year, the Australian government introduced new foreign interference laws into federal parliament, which, if passed, would put a ban on all overseas political donations. In January, Australian opposition Senator Sam Dastyari was forced to resign over alleged links to Chinese authorities. Australia's national terrorism threat level remains set at probable, which means security agencies believe that individuals or groups have the intent and capability to carry out a terrorist attack in Australia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, picking up plastic in the Philippines. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia to Hong Kong independence activists whom Hong Kong's High Court disqualified for insulting China have been sentenced to 1 month in jail for a 2016 incident in the legislative building. The two were elected that year to the Legislative Council but were disqualified by Hong Kong's High Court for insulting China while taking their oaths of office. More on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, environmentalists and volunteers in the Philippines pedaled bikes on Sunday to call attention to the impact of plastic bottles on the environment. The bike ride came after green activists collected trash Saturday along the coast at a nearby bird sanctuary. Arash Arabasadi reports the cleanup and bike ride came ahead of World Environment Day, which is today, June 5th.
More than 200 cyclists took to the streets of Manila, advocating for a plastic-free Philippines. Bikers say they are riding to raise awareness of plastic's impact on the environment by bringing fellow cyclists closer to nature.
And we believe that as long as at least one person that gets involved in biking, he will understand the importance of the environment and clean air, water, land, and oceans, because he is closer to nature, closer to it every day.
Organizers set up water stations along the nearly 13-kilometer ride to encourage cyclists to fill reusable containers with water rather than buy or receive disposable plastic bottles.
The problem with plastic usage in the Philippines, everybody considers it to be single use. They throw it away. No, they don't give it back to recycling areas. You should be able to recycle plastic. You should bring them, dispose of them properly.
The event's hashtag, Break Free from Plastic, is a call to action in rethinking how people use and dispose of plastics. Saturday, ahead of the bike ride, two dozen volunteers picked up trash that washed ashore outside a bird sanctuary on the edge of the capital. Freedom Island is less than a kilometer from Manila, and it hosts 41 species of migratory birds from August to April.
And through little ways like cleanup drives, environmental talks, you know, celebrations of days like World Environment Day, we are bringing information to the people so that they can be made aware that they're not just here to exist, but to preserve what they have now and even make it better for the generations to come.
According to the U.S.-based group Ocean Conservancy, the Philippines produces more than 2.5 million metric tons of plastic waste every year. The cleanup and cycling efforts come in advance of World Environment Day, which is on Tuesday, June 5th. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia. South Asian environmentalists say there's a regional awareness of a problem involving plastic trash pollution, but that no action plan is in place to address the issue. India alone generates around 5.6 million tons of plastic waste annually, according to the government, with Delhi among the worst cities for plastic consumption. Consume your news on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, gene therapy could potentially allow doctors to cure some of the deadliest types of cancer and rare hereditary diseases with just one injection. The FDA recently approved the use of three anti-cancer drugs, all based on genetically modified human cells. Scientists say up to 80% of all types of cancer will respond to gene therapy treatments in the future. And as VOA's Daria Dagutz reports, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
17-year-old Christian Gordino is a talented singer from New York who advanced to the semifinals of NBC's America's Got Talent last year. But the competitive spotlight has not been easy. Christian was born with a rare hereditary eye disease that gradually causes blindness. By the age of 12, he was able to see only bright light. When he was 13, Gordino was accepted into a clinical trial for a new gene therapy treatment using a drug called Luxturna. It was designed to help those who suffer from mutations of a gene called RPE65, which produces a protein vital for normal vision.
So basically, Dr. Bennett and the team were able to clone the gene, the RPE65 gene that Christian was missing. And then once it attaches, the RPE65 gene starts to produce the proteins that he was missing all those years.
After the gene therapy, I've been able to see so many incredible things like the moon, the stars, sunset, snow falling. These things I would have never been able to see before my gene therapies.
In the late 1980s, scientists discovered that the body's own lymphocytes were capable of killing melanoma, but it took another 2 decades before they managed to genetically modify cells against other types of cancer and transplant them into a patient's body.
We put the gene that encodes that ability to recognize the cancer into the lymphocyte, and we use viruses to do that. A special kind of virus that can insert the gene into these lymphocytes. We then grow them to large numbers. What that now gives us is a large vat of cells that can recognize the cancer, and we infuse it intravenously into the patient.
That means one injection can potentially kill cancer cells.
These molecules that we're targeting are not in any normal cells. And so we don't see any normal cell destruction the way you might see with chemotherapy or radiation therapy. So those complications don't exist. But sometimes when the immune system really gets roiled up, it can start secreting molecules that can cause a low blood pressure and other kinds of symptoms.
That's why more research is still needed to look at the safety and effectiveness of the new therapy.
We want to make sure that over the course of time, people are safe with these because they're gene therapies, they can affect one's genes. And so we ask for long-term follow-up.
These new therapies are very expensive. The drug that Christian received costs $500,000 per eye. But for patients who do not respond to traditional treatments, they may offer the only hope for a cure. Daria Digus for VOA News, Washington.
The world's first mini-satellites to venture into deep space, designed to monitor NASA's InSight Mars lander, have successfully oriented themselves toward the red planet. The pair of CubeSats were both launched May 5th along with the InSight lander, which is headed toward a November 26th touchdown on Mars. The CubeSats are a test of miniaturized communication and navigation technology that might be sent to other planets. Meanwhile, on Earth, streams flowing in the south of England may hold clues to the search for life on Mars. VOA's Steve Barragona has the latest flow of details.
St. Oswald's Bay on England's southern coast may not look much like Mars today, but Imperial College London geochemist Mark Sefton says minerals in these streams may provide an unexpected window into Martian history.
Those minerals are actually picking up the molecular markers of life for the organisms that surround them. And what's really exciting is that these minerals are very similar to minerals we expect to find on Mars. And previously, we just wouldn't have looked at those minerals.
These streams are acidic and high in sulfur, like experts say Mars was 3.5 to 4 billion years ago. Scientists did not think the red planet's iron-rich rocks would be good at preserving traces of life if it existed then. But Sefton's graduate student, Jonathan Tan, found one mineral in those English streams that does.
What we found is that goethite, which is that iron oxyhydroxide, is especially good for preserving these organic materials that we find in the organisms that live in these sulfur streams.
And he says what happens in St. Oswald's Bay may have happened on Mars. The group published their discovery in the journal Scientific Reports. Sefton says it can help the next mission to Mars know where to look for signs of life.
These missions are very expensive. And so by studying these rocks on Earth, we can narrow down our opportunities on Mars and increase the chances of success. That is, the chances of successful life detection if it ever existed on Mars in the past.
The next chance may be the European Space Agency's upcoming ExoMars mission, set to launch in 2020. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. If you are in Asia, you can hear us on many radio stations throughout the region, including CCU Radio at National Chungcheong University in Taipei, Taiwan. We thank everyone there today who has tuned into our program. Along with great radio stations, we've got great people putting our show on, like director Tracy Carter, engineer Zainab Abdel-Rahman, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a good day.